Okay, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to take your seats, we'll be shutting the doors. Make sure your seatbelts are fastened, and we'll be ready for takeoff. Cool. So who came to yesterday's session, part one? Woohoo! I didn't scare too many of you with code and stuff. That's good. So the rest of you are going to have to play catch-up. Because yesterday we built a bot, and it worked and stuff. It was awesome. And today we're going to extend that out, and we're going to make that bot smart, intelligent. We're going to think about what we can do to create a richer conversation between us and the applications that we're building. I said yesterday computers have become more personal, so a little bit of a recap. Because you probably had your brains fried today in a few different sessions, and just to remind you and for those that didn't come yesterday, we talked about how computers have become more personal and the context of applications that we carry around with us every day has given us this ability in software to know much more about the person. And, you know, while I don't want to say that in the last decade, maybe we've used that in ways that haven't necessarily been directly beneficial to us. I don't want to say that. That may be the truth. What would be good is if those, instead of just using it purely as an advertising platform, that context of who we are and what we do could be used in a much richer way to benefit us. And alongside that, this capability that we start to see emerging that gives us, I guess, these technologies to make devices appear more intelligent. We talked yesterday a little bit about technology being proactive and proactively giving us information ahead of the time that we may even realize we need it. And reminding us of things in a way that we don't have to go and set reminders ourselves, because the technology learns about what we do and knows about us and our and the context of me. And then driving the communication channel, and it's supposed to say customer, remember, not user, because users take drugs, customers pay us. And giving us this ability for our customers to have the conversation with our applications on the channel they want to have that conversation on. Whether it's Skype or Slack, whether it's on a web page, or an app that you've built. And we plugged the bot into an app yesterday. And Microsoft has this big vision, and I love big visions, to empower people to enrich our lives in our day-to-day activities. And to do that, we really have a whole bunch of problems that we need to solve. But one of the great ways we can do it for our customers is to add contextual information. We can surprise, delight people by being ahead of the curve with very personalized services. And this requires we know something about our customer. And actually, we do know a lot about our customers, which is great. So we should take advantage of that. So we can preempt desirable outcomes. We can look ahead and predict what would be a good outcome. And we can use machine learning to do this very effectively. And we're going to do a demo today where we're going to build a machine learning engine from scratch, because we're all rocket scientists now. We're going to use some implicit understanding, some implied understanding of the conversation to determine how we should behave. And we're going to think about the different ways that we can communicate with our customers through different channels. And what this ends up doing is starting to build more personal applications that are proactive, that are conversational. Yesterday we started building a conversational application, a way of having a conversation between software and the person in a natural language, the language of English. But maybe you want to pick another language, and over time, Microsoft will start supporting other languages. And then enhancing that with machine learning algorithms so that we can get really smart with the kinds of things that we're talking to our customers about. Now, what's interesting, and I just want to take a step sideways, so we'll park that dialogue and we'll branch into a chain from a new dialogue. Remember, we chained from yesterday. A dialogue about Windows 10 and why I think Windows 10 is in quite a unique position right now, and why Microsoft is actually in quite a unique position right now in terms of bringing this kind of platform to play and bringing this kind of platform into the world. What Windows has done over, you know, multiple decades is built up a lot of important core technology. And a lot of it's actually not that new, but it's got to some interesting points now that make it very powerful. So if you start looking at kind of where we get input into the operating system and into the systems and software that we build, we have, you know, identity at the bottom here. Okay, it's actually, you know, people think, oh, Windows Hello, it's a new thing, it's not a new thing. Yes, Windows Hello is a new thing, but biometric identification on Windows has actually been something that's been available for a while as plugins or third party. Now it's baked into the operating system. Speech. I remember speaking to my computer in like Windows 95 days. We had speech. It's just got better, right? So now it understands a bit more. And what we've had happen in the last couple of years using cognitive services and AI and machine learning and whatever words you want to apply to building smart software is the ability to actually understand the intention of the person through speech. And that's interesting. Ink. Ink is nothing new, but what we've done with ink over the last few decades has made it smoother, richer, and a more natural way of interfacing in certain experiences. Again, remember one of the things we talked about yesterday. Everything is best for something and worst for something else. And in some scenarios, ink is the best way to communicate. Gestural interfaces. Well, who here has played with the HoloLens outside? It's awesome, isn't it? It's a great tool. And it's kind of the, if you think about where we've come with gestural interfaces, yes, there's the kind of touch gestures like pinch and point and zoom and those kind of things. But also there's in-ear gestures now that started with technologies like Kinect from Microsoft's perspective anyway, and now moving into other types of compute technologies like the Microsoft hat called HoloLens. And gaze. And if you've played with HoloLens again, you would have seen some form of gaze technology where you're kind of moving your head to is where the cursor is. But I'm actually talking about going the other way, where we're doing things like eyeball tracking. And MSR, Microsoft Research, is doing a ton of work in this. Who came to the accessibility breakfast this morning? Or the diversity breakfast, whatever it was called. It was about accessibility. It was cool. And Microsoft Research has a project where people who are not able-bodied can move themselves around the world and navigate through both cyberspace and real space using gaze alone. That's pretty amazing. And so these input technologies combined with this collection of output technologies gives us this ability, and I'll quickly whiz through these, but text, of course, we've had forever, right? Like that's kind of DOS and command line and everything, but just spitting out text could also be through SMS messages or text messaging, whatever. Holograms, which is one of maybe more new things, creating 3D objects that we can navigate around and put inside real-world experiences. Audio is nothing new, but the capability to talk back to us in a smart way is maybe something that's new. We're seeing more interfaces that start to become more tangible in terms of how they provide haptic feedback or feedback through what we're touching, what we're engaging with, and actually Surface Dial, which I talk about in tomorrow's session on Dial and Studio development, is one of those devices. It's a non-dominant hand device that's providing feedback through vibration in our hand. And most of us are used to this kind of feedback, actually, because we have phones that vibrate in our pockets, right, to tell us that someone tweeted your name somewhere. And then actually a combination of all of these things is to start to create emotional output. Why can't my computer be happy that I did the right thing? Why can't my computer be angry with me that I did the wrong thing? And actually that would create interesting, more interesting conversations for me and more interesting engagements for me when I start thinking about creating output that is emotional output from my computer. And that's really up to us and our software to do. And yesterday we looked at, integrating into Cortana, and Microsoft announced Cortana Skills, which is a toolkit to enable us to extend Cortana. And this will become available later this year to everyone as developers to start building your apps that can help Cortana understand more context and provide the context Cortana has into your application and launch your applications. And this is valuable because Cortana is actually a very powerful tool that knows a lot about us. Of course, we have to give it permission, but Cortana can see my calendar. Cortana can track my food preferences and what I've been searching for and what I'm looking for. Cortana can start to become a much richer personal assistant, and then we can build software that it can call. So if you're building services or applications that someone's personal assistant might want to use, that should plug into Cortana. And so this is kind of brings us up to speed very quickly with where we got to yesterday. When I think about having a conversation with someone, and most of the people I have conversations with on a regular basis are people that know me. I do talk to strangers, but I'm not that scared of talking to strangers, and I've made lots of friends here in the last few days, and I don't consider anyone strangers anymore. But take a scenario, an example. I land in New York. My brother lives in New York, and I go to his apartment. I knock on the door, and he says, "Who is it?" I say, "Hey, bro, it's me." He says, "Well, how do I know it's you? Show me your passport. In fact, I want two forms of ID. And can you just iris scan here as well? And can I just look at your hands and make sure you've got those scars that I gave you when you were a kid?" No, he doesn't do that. He opens it. "Hey, Neil, come in." How does he know that it's me? That's magical, right? Why are our computers so stupid? How many people have to remember like tons of passwords just so they know that it's you? Like, this is ridiculous. And so we do have this technology now, and we've had it for a while, but we've now called it Windows Hello, which enables us in a much richer way to know who the person is. So let's just do a quick demo here, if my machine is still awake. Well, this is going to know, that's the first part of the demo. I didn't type a password, it just saw me, got out of the lock screen, logged me in, which is pretty cool. I added a splash screen to our bot because every application needs a splash screen, right? Now, this just went into this conversation and started this conversation, which is great, but it doesn't really know that it's me. There's no login. And a lot of applications require a login. How many people have applications that require some authorization or some login, right? So what you do is then you create a password that they have to remember, and you store the password in the cloud, and then someone cracks your cloud server and all the passwords are screwed, and then you have to go and apologize to your whole customer base because you weren't very smart and you stored passwords. So let's change that. Let's change that world. And I'll explain why this is actually really important. This is actually more secure than most password systems. And the reason it's more secure than most password systems is that this is tied to the device. Now, I just uncommented some code. We'll go and have a look at it in a minute. But this is tied to the device and me. So it's looking, it sees that it's me, but it only would work using the hash code that it has on this device with this actual device. And now it logs me in as me. Now, that's pretty cool. So let's have a quick look at what we did there. So I've got a little class called a Microsoft Passport Helper, which is actually available for you. It's part of the Microsoft Passport and Windows Hello sample code that you can download that we built, last year, I guess. And you download that class and you can add it. Now, you need an identifier. I've just hard-coded one here as me, but it doesn't have to be that. It could be a GUID or something to identify the person. And then I'm just creating a passport. Now, why am I creating a passport? I thought I wanted Windows Hello. Well, actually, Windows Hello is not something you ever have to program. You just have to program for passport. Once you program for passport, if the hardware supports Windows Hello, it automatically switches on. And so now it's registered. And in fact, one thing I'll do is, if we just run that again, and I cover up the camera so it can't see me, it's going to keep looking for me, but I can go back into PIN mode. And I can type in my PIN, and I'm in. So if you don't have the hardware required, so you can still program to passport, it'll use a PIN if it's not available, if the hardware's not capable of supporting biometric login. And it doesn't have to be face, it can be iris scan, it can be fingerprint reader, etc. But that's a great way to get started with supporting the obliteration of passwords, which I'm all for. I think that I'd like to live in a world where we don't need passwords anymore, and I think we can get there quite quickly if we switch the technology on to enable it. And Microsoft's not the only people doing this, but if you're building on the Microsoft platform, then this is a good place to start. So the next thing, let me just finish on one other thing about that. So some people will ask me the question, well, can't I just hold up a picture of you in front of the screen? No, you can't, because it's a 3D model that it creates of my face. And so you can hold up as many pictures of me at different angles as you want, and it will never recognize it as me, because it has to be my face, and it captures a whole bunch, 120-something points of the 3D model, and I'm sure over time that will grow. Yeah, there are questions, and I will take them as we go.
Just a quick one, how does that work in the context of a web app?
So you can do it in a web app, and in the sample code, there's a demo of how to do that. Of course, it has to then be running on a Windows machine, but yes. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And you can train it up to be even more accurate as well. So you can keep training Windows Hello, and if you're finding it's not quite working for you and it's bringing you back to the PIN, you keep training it. And it's using algorithms to improve. So it's worth pointing that out as we go, that it's a pretty robust scenario. Cognitive services is kind of this big collection of 20-something API sets using machine learning, but fine-tuned machine learning apps that we can use ourselves as programmers to build apps that appear smarter. And the one that I want to talk about first is Lewis. And let's go and build something in Lewis. So Lewis is the... which number do I want? Lucky number 7. Lewis is the Language Understanding Intelligence Services. And if you go to lewis.ai and log in using your passport, password, whatever. Why don't they support like this? Anyway. Seriously. We'll get there eventually. One of those will do. Anyone. You can start creating applications. Please log in. Here we go. I've got some already. But we can start creating an application for language understanding. Now, yesterday when we built the bot, remember, we looked at what's the intention behind the conversation. And that was our main dialogue, was main intent dialogue. And, the main intention that we followed the dialogue through was order food, but maybe book a table, maybe find the nearest restaurant. We were building this app for Contoso Cafe, the famous cafe. So let's create a cafe app for a bot. In fact, just so I know that it's the demo one to delete it later. And it's entertainment purposes only. That's what we're here for, right? And we'll add the app. So it's going to start giving me a canvas to start building this set of intentions on. And then we'll work out how to plug it into our bot as we've built it out. So what was our first intent was order food. And then it wants an example utterance. What would someone say if they were ordering food? No, most people are not polite. Now, I'm creating this utterance, and an utterance is just a sentence that someone might say that has this intent. And I'm doing this in order to train the language understanding as the kind of things people might say when they're asking to order food. But actually what happens when people order food is they usually order items of food. So I've ordered some items of food. So let's create what we call entities, which are components of the conversation. And we'll make the entity a menu item. And we'll also use a pre-built entity for date time. Why? Because when you order food, you sometimes want it delivered not now, but at some future point. It's very difficult to get food ordered in a past point, but in the future we can get food ordered. If anyone invents that time machine, please let me know. So, what I want to do is highlight what are menu items. And so now we're starting to teach Lewis some information about what people would want. Please get pizza for tomorrow evening. So it's already determined tomorrow evening is a date time, which is great, and I'll highlight pizza as a menu item. And I'll make that order food. Now we have to collect a few of these, so order some cake and tea. Now what I'm doing is I'm teaching it what are menu items, I'm teaching it what order food is going to look like. And as I'm doing that, so I've put only three in at the moment, which isn't very many, I'm going to train it. And it's going to start looking for patterns in the language that would indicate or help it understand what I'm looking for. So it's actually picked up now. If you look before, it was none. Now it's picking up that this is order food. And it's actually already starting to pick up the food types now as well, so I'm not having to go and... So already within a few submissions, this is starting to get smarter. And the more you do it, the better it gets, which is great, right? Because you start putting more in. And you really want to probably have, you know, I wouldn't go live with a system with less than a dozen suggestions. We may ship this with less than a dozen suggestions today, but... What does someone want? Chips and fish, of course, for Friday. So I picked up the fish, but didn't pick up the chips, but we'll get that. And we could train it again. While it's training, we'll add a new intent for book table. Now, book table is an interesting one, so book a table for... Oh, thank you. Thank you, Web. Where's our demo? There we are. How far did we get? We didn't get that far. Okay. Book table, book a table for Okay, great. So it's already booked up the timestamp, which is good. Well, one of the other things we typically do when we book a table is for a number of people, right? So I'm going to add number as something that I want to watch out for. So I could say reserve a table tomorrow evening for 6. Now, it's picked out the number. It's picked out the tomorrow evening. But it's also picked out A as a number. I don't want that. And it thinks it's order food, which it definitely is not. So we'll make it book table. And so we can start training out what booking a table is going to look like. Now, over on the right-hand side here, I can actually start tracking the performance of my language understanding system. And you can see here how many utterances I've put in and how it's performing. So okay, it knows that that's book table. I don't want a table, but I definitely want for the number of people, and definitely want when. Now, this is information that will get passed to our bot when we parse the intent. So this is, you know, we're starting to build out this interesting information now for our application. We'll do a couple more for book a table. Okay, that's a good one. And it's not order food. So you can see it's got a bit. We need to have more book tables for it to really get that working. Reserve for 8 p.m. with 5 guests. You have to think of all the crazy things that people will do. So I need to somehow highlight that. Now, it's not a menu item, so that's going to be a bit more difficult to do. I'm actually going to leave that for now and just do the 5 guests. Remember, we do get the whole sentence as well, so we can do some extra stuff with it if we want. Let's train it and then start thinking about how we publish this, because otherwise we'll be here all night training it. And I do want to come back, actually. One thing that you'll see here, and actually I can show you one that I baked earlier. So if we go to my applications, hopefully. Oh, come on, internet. Well, this is exciting, isn't it? Here we go. Let's go to this one. So you can actually import utterances, you'll see. Now, hopefully I've got some suggestions here. This is things that people have said to this instance of Lewis and that I've captured. So as people are using your application, you'll start capturing the things that have been asked. So you can now use that to improve. So I can say that's the bit that I care about. You see? Yeah. So what? No, that's none, right? I don't really, if someone says what, I don't know what to, there's no intention there. And you can see, you know, different things people have said. Hi, bot guy, order me some yummy food, dude. Wow, okay. I have no idea. This is public, so someone has been there and they wanted to order some food, dude. That was cool. You never know what you're going to get in live demos. But you can see that I can now use data that's collected to improve the bot. to improve the language understanding, and then I can retrain it based on what I've been selecting here and what I'm ticking off on this. And that will then retrain it again. And so as you launch a product and go into early stage engagement with customers, you may want to trial it with a few customers to start with, you're actually using them to collect a lot of information about the kind of things they're asking for, and you can use that to improve your system's language understanding, which is, well, awesome, I think, is the right word. Let's go back to our demo cafe app. And you'll notice there's this publish button up here, which looks kind of tempting to push, right? But actually, one thing we need to do is we need to set up an account in Azure so that we can host it and then grab information out of it to do things. And oh, here we go. Here's a pre-prep thing. This is for later on, so I'm just going to go to my Azure portal. Hopefully, it will auto-log me in because it's very cool. And we're going to create a new place to host a Lewis cognitive service. So you go and search for cognitive service APIs, which apparently is still under preview. And yeah, you want to create one of those. You'll go away and create it. And demo cafe Lewis. I'll put it on my MSDN account. And then it asks you what your service type is, and we want language understanding, asks you where you want to host it, asks your pricing tier, which you don't have a lot of choice on, and you can put it into a resource group, which is useful, and you can tick the box even if you haven't read all of this. No, sorry. You're supposed to read all of this text, and then you say, yes, I agree with it, and then you tick the box. And so we're creating a space in Azure to host our demo cafe Lewis thingy doodah. And now I have to find it in my big list of all the demo cafe things that I've built in my life. Is it this one? No, that's the machine learning one that we're going to come back to. It's probably still building it. Keep refreshing, keep hitting refresh until it pops up. But it will come up as a cognitive service, like this one's a Contoso Cafe. It's one I built earlier in case this demo doesn't work. Sometimes it takes a bit of time while everyone else is in this building is hitting Azure at the same time, no doubt. Anyway, we take out of that, so magically jump to the one that I built earlier. Here's one I baked earlier. And we can obviously do all the things we do, but what we need is these magic keys. And these magic keys are what we grab out of here, and when we go back to publish in Lewis, we go here, and we need to put that key in here. And that ties this Lewis instance that we've created in Lewis AI to our Azure hosting. And why do we need to do that? We need to do that so our bot actually has an endpoint to talk to on Azure. Because all we've done here is created a language understanding engine that's kind of floating somewhere in the cloud. We don't have an endpoint to it right now. So we need to create that endpoint in a location that is ours, so on our Azure, in our Azure account. And then we tie them together using the key, and we can publish it. And we'll just use the one I've already got, seeing as the other one was taking some time. So then once we've done that wonderful piece of magic, we then want to know how do we tie that into the bot that we were creating. Now let's go back to our main intent dialogue, and you'll see here what I've done is I've converted the main intent dialogue from an I dialogue to a Lewis dialogue. So the Lewis dialogue already knows how to connect Lewis intents into essentially a big switch statement for us that we can then work with. And I put at the top here one of those keys and an app ID to identify which endpoint I'm actually getting this Lewis dialogue to talk to in my Azure-hosted scenario. And what you can see here is that if the Lewis intent is unknown, we can run some code. If the Lewis intent is order food, we can create, and if you remember yesterday, we created that command object, right, to identify within the context of our conversation, an order food command. Well, this is now shortcutting this and getting rid of the hard-coded, remember we looked for the word order in the text. Well, that's a bit clunky, kludgy, kludgy, however you pronounce that word. But not great. Now we're using Lewis, and Lewis has a much better way of giving us an identifier of what the intent is of the customer. And the intent here was to order food, and so we're now using this to create this intent, and then when we go back to our message controller, we still have that switch at the top with the main intent, and same as yesterday, we have if it's order food, then we fire off that order food dialogue and we carry on doing what we were doing before. But now we have some extra information, remember, because we have potentially the menu items that were ordered and we could do something with those. So actually, I can't even remember if I implemented that fully in here yet. Here we go. So we order the food, and those were entities. So we strip out the entities, and the entities were the menu items. And if you remember yesterday, we hard-coded that enum of menu items just like as a kind of short-term hack to say, oh, you know, we can order any of these five things out of the menu. Now I don't care anymore, because a menu item is something that I've identified in Lewis as a food item to be ordered. And I'm just going to get that out here as an entity, and we're just actually going to spit it up on the screen. So if I go back and run the agent, which is the wrapper application around this. Hello. It is me. No passwords, yeah. Wow, you're slow today, Internet. Okay, so it's come back and it's broken out the entities out of that conversation and it's spitting them back to me. Very simplistic at the moment, but then you can see how your code behind can start doing something with that. But what we're doing here is we're disambiguating the conversation as we go through this process, which is, you know, is kind of starting to get interesting for us. Hopefully, it's starting to get interesting for us. What do I want to do next? Oh, I do want to take a slight diversion in the dialogue. How much time have we got? Yeah, we're okay. You certainly can. Don't be sorry.
So the training part's obviously, I mean, the demo is done quite hands-on. You're clicking through inputs to sort of identify stuff. Is there a way to improve that rather than just
Well, you should pay your interns. It's much better. They do better work then.
Can you sort of give a pre-formatted data set where you're actually
So Lewis enables you to import data, and you can import like a whole bunch of CSVs or spreadsheets or a whole bunch of other ways that you can import data, and you can have that pre-labeled. One thing I think you'll find, though, which is kind of interesting, I've certainly found anyway, is that you can get quite good results out of Lewis with a very small set to start with. And then the thing that I showed you, the suggestions based on what other people are asking, is actually way more interesting than data sets that people have cleaned and produced and gone, oh, yeah, this is definitely what people will ask. Now, I know that a bunch of people have, like, support centers and call centers, which maybe is your scenario as well. We already have captured a bunch of requests that people have asked for out of, you know, your online system or even a telephone call system. And you can feed that in as well. But I tend to find that, if people are chatting on a bot, their language is usually a bit different to how they're talking on the phone or how they're maybe making requests by email. And so because of that, you often don't want to start off with by putting too much data in. It's actually better to start with a small set of customers that you can work with a small set of data, and then start improving it based on what customers are actually asking for and how they're engaging. Because we do engage, when we chat on a chatbot or on Skype or on Slack, we do our language changes, and the way we use language and the way we use words and sentences is different. And so, yes, you can, but you may not actually get better results by doing that. Yeah. Yeah, we'll bounce. Okay. Dialogue shift. Chain from.
The context that comes in as part of the input.
Yeah.
Does that kind of get passed back and forth so you can kind of track where the user is? Like, you can have a multi-step conversation and it'll know that you're at step 8 and it'll pass the response differently based on where you are in the conversation?
That depends a little bit on how you set up your bot, not on Lewis. So you could set up a bot that uses multiple Lewis dialogues with different instances of Lewis models based on where the conversation is at, right? So you expect a dialogue to be raised at a certain point in the conversation. And so at that point in the conversation, you may build a different Lewis model than the one at the beginning of the conversation, because the intention may be different. Well, the bot development piece does, yes, because you are chaining into different dialogues and out of dialogues. And remember, you can store the conversation. Were you in yesterday's session? Then you can store the context of the conversation as you're driving in. And so I've done that at a very simplistic level with this command object. But I expect as you build that out, your command object would be maybe multiple objects that start to model what's happening in the conversation. Yeah, we'll bounce back. No, not necessarily. Again, it depends on the context. Sometimes it can actually get better faster because you have some well-known entities within the sentence that you're always looking for, right? So although it may appear to be a more complex sentence, the fact that it has every one of those sentences has a set of well-known entities, it may actually be faster to train it on a smaller number of sentences, and it will get better, more accurate, faster. So it's not necessarily the immediate appearance or complexity of the complexity, but more to do with how the kind of conversation is structured that would shift that, I suspect. But I haven't done enough analysis to know, like, oh, this is the tipping point at which you really want to have this piece of that conversation. Yeah.
The two sort of verbs that you've used in the demos, I think, is order and get.
Yeah.
Is Lewis doing some kind of language processing to the extent that you could throw some other verb out?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, do you want to give me one? We'll try it.
I don't know.
What would naturally be another way of asking for some?
I'd like.
Yeah, okay, let's see. Chance is quite high because menu items are only in order food, right? When you book table, you don't ask for a menu item.
I guess the challenge that comes that you also have another thing that is asking the price of an item versus ordering that would need to differentiate somehow.
Yeah, and so your intent might be price versus, it might be a price request versus purchase request. Yeah. Is it possible to... Overtrain. I've not seen it, but what I have seen is people try and do things that are too similar as different intents. So you've got two different intents, but they're actually very similar, and they're trying to make them two different things, and they're not. They're actually the same underlying intent, and that can be problematic. So you need to really identify what your intents are as very separate intentions of the conversation. We'll go right to the back there. You've had your hand up. It won't give you multiple intents, no. It would pull that out as one intent. But remember, you do get the whole sentence, so then at some stage further down the line, you could disambiguate that. No. It does give you the ranking, yeah. So you can actually get out of it. You could say, there's 70% chance you're ordering food, and there's a 30% chance that this is about... when you want the food. But then I would look at that and go, that's actually just a food order, right? With different entities inside it. Yeah.
Presumably you can front-end this with voice-to-text, sign language-to-text, whatever, and get a whole experience going through.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for that, because you're going to win some... If I had a prize, I'd give it to you. But let's just show that, because actually one of the things I did here, if I spin this up, is I added voice to this application, which isn't very hard to do in Windows 10. I didn't want to cancel. Yes.
Hi. How may I help you?
Order a coffee and cake.
Heard you say, what are the coffee and cake?
The microphone really doesn't help.
You have ordered the following items.
Still,
coffee, cake.
It still pulled out the intent, which is pretty amazing, but kind of to be expected with the limited model that we currently have. So yes, adding speech is very simple to... an application, and remember, if you came to yesterday's session, we did a direct line application, so I'm using the speech capabilities of Windows to do that, and then just doing text-to-speech and speech-to-text in Windows. If you want to do it in the cloud, Bing has a great engine to do that. You can do text-to-speech and speech-to-text using Bing on the cloud. But yeah, it's not a difficult thing to do. It's just really annoying when you start testing it. But yeah, good question. I know there were a bunch of other questions, so I'll try and get through them. Yes? Yeah. So you can actually start breaking down sentences more rigorously if you want, using some regex expressions and putting your own kind of code in there if you want to do that. Again, typically I haven't found a need for it, but I'm sure there are use cases, which is why it's there. And I know there's more questions, but I want to keep going so we can do some machine learning stuff, which is one of the next things I wanted to talk about, and then we'll take questions, and the conversation will probably go outside afterwards if we get back to our slides. Which button was it? This one, maybe? Yeah. So machine learning is something that we've been working with. Like, Lewis is part of machine learning, but actually it's kind of a bit of a cheat, really, because the guys that build Lewis and build a lot of the cognitive services, they really are rocket scientists. Like, they're the guys that are hardcore AI type machine learning people, and they're building algorithms in ways that typically day to day we don't have the spare 27 years to learn how to do what they're doing, right? So what Microsoft has done is created this capability for us to build our own machine learning algorithms in a very simplistic way on Azure, on their cloud. And what we're going to do now is build a machine learning algorithm to predict what food you might like to eat, because that's important. And In order to do that, we're going to go to Azure. And it takes a bit of time building out these machine learning workspaces, so I've prepped one for us. But you essentially create a machine learning work canvas in Azure. And this is the starting point. Once you've done the create, this is the starting point that you get to. And then we can go and play around with it. Hopefully it will launch up the space I want. And I have to sign in again. Woohoo. Now, what this famous cafe, Contoso Cafe, has done is collected 18 months' worth of food ordering history and put it all in, as every cafe does, a spreadsheet. Right? Now, of course, hopefully they would put it in a database or something else, but in our scenario, they're going to put it into a spreadsheet. And so what I want to do is load that spreadsheet, and I've preloaded it here because it takes a bit of time to upload that data. It's a CSV file, essentially. I've preloaded it up here, and it's a bunch of data. And in that data is the date, food that was ordered, and the weather. Because apparently the weather makes a big difference to the kind of food that people order. So if it's a hot day, people tend to get salads or fruit. And if it's a cold day, people tend to get chunky kind of hot food. So they want to use this to predict what people might like to eat, or what you might like to eat going forward. So we're going to run an experiment. And it's always good to think of that word first and foremost when we're building out machine learning stuff, because it is all experiments. We're never quite sure what's going to work and what's not going to work. So I'm going to create a new experiment here. You'll see it's got my timestamp on it. And what I want to do is put in that data that we've just collected. Now, where is my data sets? Save data sets, right at the top. My data sets, food data. And I'm just going to drag it in here. Now, this is a great little interface for building out machine learning experiments, tests, with different algorithms that are provided for us. I'm just jumping through my cheat sheet to make sure I know which algorithms we're going to actually use. And there is a great cheat sheet up on the website that lets you determine which ones might be the best ones to use. Now, one of the first things to do when you build machine learning algorithms is to split the data that you have into two pieces. And a lot of people go 50-50, but actually I'd like to use, because I don't have that much data, 70-30. So I'm going to use 70% of the data for building out the algorithm, and then I'm going to test against the 30% that I haven't used for building the algorithm to see how close I am to accuracy. So you split your data set so that you can train on some of it and test against other parts of it. And that's what I want to do next, is I want to create a training model. So, find the components that I want in machine learning. Training. Train model. And I'm going to drag out that train model, and I'm going to start connecting that together. And now I need an algorithm to train against. But what I also want to do is determine what of my data I actually care about training for. And it split my data into columns, and what I'm really looking for is the food item, because that's what I want to be predicting, is what kind of food would people want based on the rest of the data that we're able to provide. And then we're going to try and classify the data in a way to determine whether or not we're, or what kind of data we're getting. I'm actually just going to use a multi-class logistical regression, and anyone that knows this kind of stuff will know, oh, okay, that may not be the best one to use, but that's okay, we're going to test it. Remember, it's an experiment. But there's a whole host of these different ways of classifying data, and you can play around with them. Like, it actually doesn't matter whether you fully understand what they're doing or not, because you can play around and see what gets you the best results. And so the next thing we're going to do is we're going to take that, we're going to play around with it, and then we're going to score it. And in order to score it, I need... There's my scoring. Here's scoring. I'm going to score my model. And I'm going to score against the other half of the split. Whoop. Let's just drag that over here so it's easier. So I'm running the algorithm across 70% of it, and I'm going to score that against 30% of it. And then the final thing I want to do is evaluate it. And that's in the machine learning evaluation section, which is up here. I'll evaluate that model and build it out. So, you know, whether it's good, bad, or ugly, we can run it and it will go away and it will build out this machine learning algorithm based on the data that we have, which is... actually happened quite quickly. I'm quite impressed that it happened that fast. And we can visualize how well that's done, and we can bring up like a table showing, you know, what it's selected and whether we like that or not. Now I'm going to assume we do like it. We probably don't like it, but I don't have enough time to go and fiddle around with getting it exactly right. But you can get the idea that within this canvas, you can start building out and playing around with machine learning algorithms and your own data sets, which is kind of cool. And then you can go and publish your algorithm. When you're ready, you can create a predictive web service based on this algorithm. So you can go and build out, and you can see here it's kind of combining some of the pieces of the model together to build it out into a web service. And again, we're running low on time, so rather than going and showing, but you go and get API keys again from Azure, and you put them all together. Oh, that's not what I wanted to do. And you can deploy this as a web service, which you can then call from your code. So let's have a look at actually doing that. In order to do that, I need to provide, and in fact I'm doing it in the bot, I need to provide the bot with some information. And the information I'm going to provide the bot with is, at the beginning of the conversation, I'm going to give it my location so that it can find the weather, because there's plenty of web services online that will get the weather for a location. And I'm going to provide my time zone offset, just because it's one of those annoying things that is hard to get right. So, especially for Queenslanders, why? Why? Anyway, why am I a different time zone to Sydney? I have no idea. Maybe it's the Sydney-siders that need to change. Anyway, so the first thing it's going to do is send up some information. And it tells us, well, okay, it's currently 25 degrees in Coolangatta, and today you'd probably like to eat a chicken wrap, and it will order it for my lunch. Awesome. How fantastic is that? So I've used that machine learning algorithm. I've fed data into it. I've used the current environment that I'm in order to start to get predictive. And remember, you know, the conversation that I've been having with you over the last 2 days is about starting to use this technology to predict what people might want and jump ahead of, you know, their request to give them suggested things that would help them through their activities and through what they're doing. So we've gone ahead and done that and pulled together this lovely little bot with Lewis and machine learning. And go back and talk a little bit about what we've actually done. Wrong button. I've done that twice now. We said yesterday, conversation as a platform is a natural way for us as humans to engage with machines. And we're starting to build that out. Now, I'd say we're still early days in all of this stuff, yeah? And that's typically the space I hang out in, is early days space. You know, you looked at the timeline of stuff that I did yesterday, or yesterday you looked at the timeline of stuff I've done over the last 20 years. It's all pretty early stage, and I think we're early stage with this stuff too. I think it's exciting stuff, and I think it's, you know, potentially a technology that will change the way we interface with computers. Is it going to happen tomorrow? Well, unless all you guys go and build conversational platform applications in the next week, I don't think it's going to happen very fast. Like, this is stuff that you guys are starting to play around with and look at. But we are seeing it emerging as a space that more and more activity is going to happen in. And it's going to happen, like I said yesterday, in some spaces before others. In fact, it already is there in cars, right? In most modern cars, you buy a car, you have conversation as a platform, a vocal conversation that you speak to your car to ask it to make phone calls, to turn the volume up, turn the volume down. There's a lot of things, get directions, a lot of things that are starting to happen in that space. And it's starting to happen on mobile devices. Siri, OK Google, Cortana, we're starting to see this already there. So we know this is stuff that's starting to emerge, and we're starting to see bots have a strong play in certain channels. Like, there's some ridiculous number of Facebook bots out there. I don't know who uses them all, maybe nobody, but they're starting to appear, and we're starting to see Skype bots becoming adopted. The thing that the bot framework gives us is this ability to build one set of code and deploy it across multiple channels. So we can build a set of code and put it in Facebook and Skype and Slack and Kik and on our web page and in our UWP app and in our WPF app and so on. And so we have one code base, which is kind of cool. We already talked about it. It uses the language we're already using, which is great. And it uses the channels that we're already communicating on. And that's an important thing to remember and think about. And yesterday I started off with this, and I'm going to kind of finish with this as a point that, you know, as I said, the future is kind of already here in certain areas. What we need to think about is, how do we extend that out into the work we're doing? Does it have application? Maybe it doesn't. If it's not good for what we're doing, then, you know, don't force it. There'll be some scenarios that it's really not appropriate to. And there's other scenarios that it's very appropriate to. Support scenarios is a good one. If you know, are running a big support center, then you can imagine automating a whole chunk of that with conversational bots or conversational software. And we're seeing that as a strong play already. As you know, we've been asked, my team has been asked to build out bots for a number of support organizations. And that's an interesting play where they can, you know, hit 80% of the questions they get asked are repeated again and again and again, and bots can learn the intention behind that and provide valid answers that solve a very large percentage of customers' requirements and get them moving forward onto the next thing. And then, of course, you can, in certain channels, hand that off to a real person at some point. So if someone is on Skype having a chat with a bot, there's nothing stopping you. At some point, the bot says, I now need to include a person into this Skype chat, because I can't help you any further, and then it invites someone from the support center into that Skype chat. And then you carry on the conversation with the whole context of what the bot has taken the customer through into that conversation. So it's a pretty interesting space that I think we'll see more happening in. And it's certainly a space that there's a large investment from Microsoft, Google, Amazon, Apple going into, is how we spend more time having chats or conversations with the technology that we're engaging with. So I know there are a ton of questions, so I'm going to get to that question session as soon as I've given you the default slides. I don't know, can you still do this? Probably. I don't think we've done the thing yet. But and I won't be in the speaker lounge after this, but if you want to talk now, I'm happy to have a chat now. Have a conversation about conversations. So, thanks everyone. I'll take questions if there are more questions. Yeah?
I'm interested in mentioning the support call centers. with that, as much as it's been about putting the chatbot as the interface to an expert system, or is it more just
Both, actually. So answering intents, but also like plugging it into an FAQ, plugging it into a Q&A type environment, and plugging it into a search. In fact, what Jordan showed on the first in the keynote in the morning on the first day, was it the morning? I think so. I totally don't know what time of day it is. It doesn't really matter. It's now. That used like one system, then another system, then another system. And so you can start off by trying to get intent. I don't understand the intent. Is it an FAQ? Don't understand, it's not an FAQ. Can I just do a search on my knowledge base? Maybe I'll find it there.
Yeah, we've got more of a hierarchical expert system behind it.
So yeah.
It's too complex for Q&A and...
Yeah, so you may... But if it's got an interface, you could plug a bot into it, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
How would you undo an office? Like the one where it misunderstood what you wanted from the FA and...
You can go back and look at the trained data and remove it, but actually you will always get some amount of spurious data in there, and you just keep training, it gets better, and it starts ignoring the ones that are...
What I mean was, when it said, I've ordered you a coffee and cake, and you wanted to know, that's not what I meant.
Right. Yeah, so that will now go into Lewis. So I can find that ordered coffee and cake in Lewis, and I can change it to be another intent. And that would start training Lewis to look at that a different way. Yeah. So everything that has been typed in or pushed through to Lewis is collected. We don't know who said it, so I don't know who said they want yummy food, dude. but I know someone did, and then I can use that as a way of training the system. Oh, I see, in the conversation flow. Yes, absolutely you could. So at any point, I mean, that's up to you how you program your bot, but you can at any point in that dialogue conversation, you could put in a clause that says, you know, don't do that, back out, stop. And then it would, you can unwind. In fact, yesterday when we built out the main root dialogue, one thing you may remember is that we switched and did a whole bunch of chaining into different dialogues. But at the end of that, we didn't unwind. Okay, yeah. So watch yesterday's session tomorrow. or whenever it goes online. I don't know when they're putting these online. But yeah, you can go back in time and watch yesterday's session. You'll see how we built out the chain. Yeah. Or just look at docs.botframework.com and you can start building a bot. There's a whole set of getting started guides to get you going building a bot. Hi, John.
Sorry.
That's all right. You can come into my session.
I've seen some bots that does a confirmation dialogue at the end.
Uh-huh.
They could do rich replies rather than just text. And I've seen that combined with, say, confirming what you want. Like, okay, this is what you want. I'm about to order this entity. You get like a little confirmation.
Yeah, so depending on what channel you're on, you get different amounts of richness into the conversation, and things like Skype support this concept of cards. Slack does the same thing, and you can actually put buttons into the conversation and checkboxes and radio buttons and options. I've avoided talking about that right now because it's not on every channel. So, you know, if I try and put a card, a media card that plays a video and then has three buttons under it into an SMS message, what I don't know what happens at that point. Like it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't succeed. But so I've kept it very much to a text conversation. But you can, if you know the channel, if you know, oh, everyone who's talking to this bot is on Slack or is on Skype, you can actually get rich and start using some of the features of that channel. So I have two questions for you on that. The first one is, do you want the bot to be authenticated, or do you want the customer to be authenticated? Because they're two different things, and actually one thing that I've seen done very effectively is where the bot has its own Active Directory account. So it is a person in the system, or a user in the system. And it can then do things on behalf of people. So I've even seen where people have created calendars or SharePoint sites that the bot is the manager of. And actually, you can't go to it as a user. I can't access that SharePoint site or that calendar any other way except by going through the bot. And that's quite an interesting scenario. So the bot then becomes the interface to that endpoint where the data is kept. So that's one scenario, and that's quite a simple one to solve, right? Because you essentially are giving the bot the credentials. The more complicated one is where you want the user's credentials to flow through the bot to access something on behalf of the user. And you want to think about that in a couple of ways. Well, first of all, yes, the user is going to have to authenticate, right? Do you use two-factor authentication?
On some things.
We use it on everything. Life will be better. And one of the reasons I say that is that if your bot is trying to behave on your behalf and you're using two-factor authentication, then the user will get a notification on their phone saying, hey, this is trying to happen, do you give it permission? Which actually bypasses a lot of your worry about, oh, God, now what happens? Do I have to pass this through to the next level? And, you know, the Azure Active Directory stuff actually makes that a whole bunch easier. If you're not using two-factor authentication, then you somehow have to pass those credentials, and then you're starting to think, well, how do I do this in a safe way? And whatever you do, you encrypt it, you create tokens, and that's essentially what you're doing, is you're creating tokens. You're opening yourself up for potential attack, some intercept somewhere along the line. I would avoid that if I could. So, yes, it's possible, technically. Is it good practice? Probably not anymore. There is.
PMP,
yeah.
Where the bot will basically need to raise a consent dialogue, and the user is granting the bot app a delegation.
Yeah.
And then the bot has to remember the access token that comes through and do its own separate.
Yeah. And you would store that in your conversation context.
Yeah. I don't know what happens on the bot.
Well, it uses that token to make a request on AD on behalf of that person. I would really try and avoid that. If I was building it, I'd be looking for ways that I could get the bot to have its own identification that can behave as itself. And it can still know who it's behaving on behalf of, but it has its own authorization to go and do things on resources in the system. Well, that's not a hard thing to do. You can give another AD account permission to add things to a calendar.
And then how would you know who that person is without asking who they are?
You probably wouldn't, but again, depends on the channel. And actually, in Teams, you do know, because they're already authed into Teams. So you're actually a big advantage, because you're already, to get into Teams, you have to be AD authed. So you actually do, you can pull out of it some information about who the every message that gets delivered, or I think we call them activities now, gets delivered, comes with a from token. And that from token, you can then investigate or interrogate that from property to find out more about that person. And if you're in Teams, it means you're already signed into AD, that from property will actually have some interesting information for you. That's where you want to be looking. But you must be using Bot Framework 3.5. Don't use an earlier version. You've already built your bot in Teams, right? Do you know what version you were using? Yeah, that's 3.5, so you'll be fine. Yeah. There's a couple. One was to do with a location that had multiple rooms and room booking in different locations and being able to disambiguate what they were trying to do, which rooms, how many people they needed the room for. It was I gave a little bit of a demo, a sneak of it yesterday, but it's a room booking bot. It's not overly complicated, but the kinds of things that people ask for, like facilities and requirements in the rooms. I need a room that can support 25 people. It's got to have a projector. It's got to have audio. It's got to have... And you start digging into it, then it gets a little bit more interesting. A bit of both. Yeah, I mean, we did some training to get initial intention, and then you can start disambiguating the sentence yourself once you've got the initial understanding of which direction they're going in. And, you know, like you have the raw text, like I said, and so splitting out the entities yourself is actually not that hard once you start knowing. Once you get into a more niche area, then the language understanding actually gets a bunch easier. Yeah, there's a very large organization, I won't say who they are, but in the US that we did a project with that wants to create all of its internal support through bots that hand off to bots that hand off to bots. And I actually, when I first started looking at it, I was like, you guys are nuts. But they've started building it out and we've helped them and they are starting to get somewhere. So they have like a top level bot that gets main level intention, and then it pans off depending if you're to do with one set of products or another set of products to another set of bots, and it keeps drilling in. It's quite clever what they're doing, but
is there again, is there a bit more brute forcing, or is there actually sort of doing some interactions between those players?
I would say it's doing some interesting interactions. Yeah. Yeah.
When they hand off, they pass the context along, like,
yeah.
The
context they think is valuable, they pass along. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you could have, that's where the interesting work happens, I guess, right? How that context gets assigned, where it goes.
So I'm going to take one more question because I think Mr. AV Man wants to go home, and I'm sure some other people do too. So that's nice, good. Yeah, I mean, you know, nothing is new is the famous old saying, right? And actually, like, if you call up, I don't know, Marriott or United or National Cars or Hertz or... most of these systems are actually conversational bots. And some of them are rich and some of them are really damn obvious. Like, Press One is pretty obvious. But, like, United has had quite a good one in the US for a while, which is... You know, oh, I think they look at your phone number that you're calling from, and if they know it, they say, oh, hi, I think you're Neil Rudin. Can you confirm? And you say yes. It says, oh, hi, Neil, okay. I see you have a reservation for tomorrow. Are you calling about that? And it's trying to be conversational. So, a lot of the IVR type, you know, phone systems have been trying to do this for a while. It's known to be a hard problem to solve at some level. And what we're trying to do, what Microsoft is trying to do, is democratize this. Yeah, and you know, PI is a tough problem to solve. It's a conversation for another day. I'll try and hang out in the speaker area tomorrow morning first thing. So if people have more stuff they want to talk about, come find me there.
Thank you.
Thank you.